The Chemical Wedding by Cristiano Cruz de Rosa. Day 5. The night was over, and the dear wished for day broken, when hastily I got me out of bed, more desirous to learn what might yet ensue, than that I had sufficiently slept. Now after that I had put on my clothes, and according to my custom was gone down the stairs, it was still too early, and I found nobody else in the hall, wherefore I entreated my page to lead me a little about the castle, and show me some wit that was rare, who was now, as always, willing, and presently led me down certain steps underground, to a great iron door. Now after this door was opened, the page led me by the hand through a very dark passage, till we came again to a very little door, that was now only put to, for, as my page informed me, it was first opened but yesterday when the coffins were taken out, and had not been since shut. Now as soon as we stepped in, I espied the most precious thing that nature ever created, for this vault had no other light but from certain huge great carbuncles, and this, as I was informed, was the king's treasury. But the most glorious and principal thing, that I here saw, was a sepulchre, which stood in the middle, so rich that I wondered that it was no better guarded, whereunto the page answered me, that I had good reason to be thankful to my planet, by whose influence it was that I had now seen certain pieces which no humane eye else, except the king's family, had ever had a view of. This sepulchre was triangular, and had in the middle of it a kettle of polished copper, the rest was of pure gold and precious stones. In the kettle stood an angel, who held in his arms an unknown tree, from which it continually dropped fruit into the kettle, and an oft as the fruit fell into the kettle, it turned into water, and ran out from thence into three small golden kettles standing by. This little altar was supported by these three animals, an eagle, an ox, and a lion, which stood on an exceeding costly base. I asked my page what this might signify. "Here," said he, "lies buried Lady Venus, that beauty which hath undone many a great man, both in fortune, honor, blessing, and prosperity." After which he showed me a copper door on the pavement. "Here," said he, "if you please, we may go further down." "I still follow you," replied I. So I went down the steps, where it was exceeding dark, but the page immediately opened a little chest, wherein stood a small ever-burning taper, at which he kindled one of the many torches which lay by. I was mightily terrified, and seriously asked how he durst do this. He gave me for answer, "As long as the royal persons are still at rest, I have nothing to fear." Herewith I espied a rich bed ready made, hung about with curious curtains, one of which he drew, where I saw the Lady Venus stark naked, for he heaved up the coverlets too, lying there in such beauty, and a fashion so surprising, that I was almost besides myself, neither do I yet know whether it was a piece thus carved, or a human corpse that lay dead there. For she was altogether immovable, and yet I durst not touch her. So she was again covered, and the curtain drawn before her, yet she was still, as it were, in my eye. But I soon espied behind the bed a tablet on which it was thus written. I asked my page concerning this writing, but he laughed, with promise that I should know it too. So he putting out the torch, we again ascended. Then I better viewed all the little doors, and first found that on every corner there burned a small taper of Pyrites, of which I had before taken no notice, for the fire was so clear, that it looked much like a stone than a taper. From this heat the tree was forced continually to melt, yet it still produced new fruit. "Now behold," said the page, "what I heard revealed to the king by Atlas. When the tree," said he, "shall be quite melted down, then shall Lady Venus awake, and be the mother of a king." Whilst he was thus speaking, in flew the little Cupid, who at first was somewhat abashed at our presence, but seeing us both look more like the dead than the living, he could not at length refrain from laughing, demanding what spirit had brought me thither, whom I with trembling answered, that I had lost my way in the castle, and was by chance come hither, and that the page likewise had been looking up and down for me, and at last lighted upon me here. I hoped he would not take it amiss. "Nay then 'tis well enough yet," said Cupid, "my old busy grandsire, but you might lightly have served me a scurvy trick, had you been aware of this door? Now I must look better to it, and so he put a strong lock on the copper door, where we before descended. I thanked God that he lighted upon us no sooner. My page too was the more jocund, because I had so well helped him at this pinch. Yet can I not, said Cupid, let it pass unrevenged, that you were so near stumbling upon my dear mother. With that he put the point of his dart into one of the little tapers, and heating it a little, pricked me with it on the hand, which at that time I little regarded, but was glad that it went so well with us, and that we came off without further danger. Meantime my companions were gotten out of bed too, and were again returned into the hall. To whom I also joined myself, making as if I were then first risen. After Cupid had carefully made all fast again, he came likewise to us, and would needs have me show him my hand, where he still found a little drop of blood, at which he heartily laughed, and bade the rest have a care of me, as I would shortly end my days. We all wondered how Cupid could be so merry, and have no sense at all of the yesterday's sad passages. But he was no what troubled. Now our president had in the meantime made herself ready for the journey, coming in all in black velvet, yet she still bare her branch of laurel. Her virgins too had their branches. Now all things being in readiness, the virgin bid us first drink somewhat, and then presently prepare for the procession, wherefore we made no long tarrying but followed her out of the hall into the court. In the court stood six coffins, and my companions thought no other but that the six royal persons lay in them, but I well observed the device. Yet I knew not what was to be done with these other. By each coffin were eight muffled men. Now as soon as the music went, it was so mournful and dulsome a tune, that I was astonished at it. They took up the coffins, and we, as we were ordered, were fain to go after them into the forementioned garden, in the midst of which was erected a wooden edifice, having round about the roof a glorious crown, and standing upon seven columns, within it were formed six sepulchres, and by each of them a stone, but in the middle it had a round hollow rising stone. In these graves the coffins were quietly and with many ceremonies laid. The stones were shoved over them, and they shut fast. But the little chest was to lie in the middle. Herewith were my companions deceived, for they imagined no other but that the dead corpse were there. Upon the top of all there was a great flag, having a phoenix painted on it, perhaps therewith the more to delude us. Here I had great occasion to thank God that I had seen more than the rest. Now after the funerals were done, the Virgin, having placed herself upon the middlemost stone, made a short oration, that we should be constant to our engagements, and not repine at the pains we were hereafter to undergo, but be helpful in restoring the present buried royal persons to life again, and therefore without delay to rise up with her, to make a journey to the Tower of Olympus, to fetch from thence medicines useful and necessary for this purpose. This we soon agreed to, and followed her through another little door guise to the shore. There the seven forementioned ships stood all empty, on which all the virgins stuck up their laurel branches, and after they had distributed us in the six ships, they caused us in God's name thus to begin our voyage, and looked upon us as long as they could have us in sight, after which they with all the watchmen returned into the castle. Our ships had each of them a peculiar device. Five of them indeed had the five regular bodies, each a several one, but mine in which the Virgin too sat, carried a globe. Thus we sailed on in a singular order, and each had only two mariners. Foremost went the ship as in which, as I conceive the Moor lay. In this were 12 musicians, who played excellent well, and its device was a pyramid. Next followed three abreast, B, C, and D, in which we were disposed. I sat in C. In the midst behind these came the two fairest and stateliest ships, E and F, stuck about with many branches of laurel, having no passengers in them, their flags were the sun and moon. But in the rear only one ship, G, in this were 40 virgins. Now being thus passed over this lake, we first came through a narrow arm, into the right sea, where all the sirens, nymphs, and sea goddesses had attended us, wherefore they immediately dispatched a sea nymph to us to deliver their present and offering of honor to the wedding. It was a costly, great, set, round and orient pearl, the like to which hath not at any time been seen, either in ours, or yet in the new world. Now the Virgin having friendly received it, the nymph further entreated that audience might be given to their divertisements, and to make a little stand, which the Virgin was content to do, and commanded the two great ships to stand into the middle, and with the rest to encompass them in pentagon. After which the nymphs fell into a ring about them, and with a most delicate sweet voice began thus to sing. First. There's nothing better here below than beauteous, noble, love, whereby we like to God do grow, and none to grief do move. Wherefore let's chant it to the King, that all the sea thereof may ring. We question, answer you. Second. What was it that at first us made? 'Twas love. And what hath grace afresh conveyed? 'Tis love. Whence was he, pray tell us, we were born? Of love. How came we then again forlorn? Sans love. Third. Who was it, say, that us conceived? 'Twas love. Who suckled, nursed, and relieved? 'Twas love. What is it we to our parents owe? 'Tis love. What do they us such kindness show? Of love. Fourth. Who gets herein the victory? 'Tis love. Can love by search obtained be? By love. How may a man good works perform? Through love. Who into one can two transform? 'Tis love. Fifth. Then let our song sound till its echo rebound to love's honor and praise, which may ever increase with our noble princes, the King and the Queen. The soul is departed, their bodies within. Sixth. And as long as we live, God graciously give that as great love and amity they bear each other mightily, so we likewise, by love's own flame, may reconjoin them once again. Seventh. Then this annoy into great joy, if many thousand younglings deign shall change, and ever so remain. They having with most admirable consent and melody finished this song, I no more wondered at Ulysses for stopping the ears of his companions, for I seemed to myself the most unhappy man alive, that nature had not made me too so trim a creature. But the Virgin soon dispatched them, and commanded to set sail from thence, wherefore the nymphs too, after they had been presented with a long red scarf for a gratuity, went off, and dispersed themselves in the sea. I was at this time sensible that Cupid began to work with me too, which yet tended but very little to my credit, and for as much as my giddiness is likely to be nothing beneficial to the reader, I am resolved to let it rest as it is. But this was the very wound that in the first book I received on the head in a dream. And let every one take warning by me of loitering about Venus's bed, for Cupid can by no means brook it. After some hours, having in friendly discourses made a good way, we came within ken of the Tower of Olympus, wherefore the Virgin commanded by the discharge of some pieces to give the signal of our approach, which was also done. And immediately we espied a great white flag thrust out, and a small gilded pinnace sent forth to meet us. Now as soon as this was come to us, we perceived in it a very ancient man, the warden of the tower, with certain guards clothed in white, of whom we were friendly received, and so conducted to the tower. This tower was situated upon an island exactly square, which was environed with a wall so firm and thick, that I myself counted 260 passes over. On the other side of the wall was a fine meadow with certain little gardens, in which grew strange, and to me unknown, fruits, and then again an inner wall about the tower. The tower of itself was just as if seven round towers had been built one by another, yet the middlemost was somewhat the higher, and within they all entered one into another, and had seven stories one above another. Being thus come to the gates of the tower, we were led a little aside on the wall, that so, as I well observed, the coffins might be brought into the tower without our taking notice. Of this the rest knew nothing. This being done, we conducted into the tower at the very bottom, which albeit it were excellently painted, yet we had here little recreation, for this was nothing but a laboratory, where we were fain to beat and wash plants, and precious stones, and all sorts of things, and extract their juice and essence, and put up the same in glasses, and deliver them to be laid up. And truly our Virgin was so busy with us, and so full of her directions, that she knew how to give each of us employment enough, so that in this island we were fain to be mere drudges, till we had achieved all that was necessary for the restoring of the beheaded bodies. Meantime, as I afterwards understood, three virgins were in the first apartment washing the corpse with all diligence. Now having at length almost done with this our preparation, nothing more was brought us, but some broth with a little draught of wine, whereby I well observed, that we were not here for our pleasure, for when we had finished our day's work too, every one had only a mattress laid on the ground for him, wherewith we were to content ourselves. For my part I was not very much troubled with sleep, and therefore walked out into the garden, and at length came as far as the wall, and because the heaven was at that time very clear, I could well drive away the time in contemplating the stars. By chance I came to a great pair of stone stairs, which led up to the top of the wall. And because the moon shone very bright, I was so much the more confident, and went up, and looked too a little upon the sea, which was now exceeding calm, and thus having good opportunity to consider better of astronomy, I found that this present night there would happen such a conjunction of the planets, the like to which was not otherwise suddenly to be observed. Now having looked a good little into the sea, and it being just about midnight, as soon as it had struck 12, I beheld from far the seven flames passing over sea hitherward, and betaking themselves to the top of the spire of the tower. This made me somewhat afraid, for as soon as the flames had settled themselves, the winds arose, and began to make the sea very tempestuous. The moon also was covered with clouds, and my joy ended with such fear, that I had scarce time enough to hit upon the stairs again, and betake myself again to the tower. Now whether the flames tarried any longer, or passed away again, I cannot say, for in this obscurity I durst no more venture abroad. So I laid me down upon my mattress, and there being besides in the laboratory a pleasant and gently purling fountain, I fell asleep so much the sooner. And thus this fifth day too was concluded with wonders.